Welcome to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Cybersecurity has commanded national attention with high-profile attacks of healthcare organizations. In this episode, we talk with Dan Dodson, the CEO of Fortified Health Security, a cybersecurity company. We talk about the risks of cyber attacks to hospitals and health systems, the role of AI, and the impact of attacks. It's worth noting that this conversation took place before the massive cyber attack on Change Healthcare, which has disrupted the entire healthcare system. Dan offers important insights about the risks to healthcare organizations from attacks on their vendors and third parties, which has certainly been illustrated in recent weeks. Please join us for an important conversation. Well, thank you for joining us today. Today, we're talking with Dan Dodson, the CEO of Fortified Health Security, and we're going to have a discussion about cybersecurity. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ron. Really appreciate the opportunity to collaborate.
Well, let's talk about this past year. It seems like there were a lot of high-profile attacks on hospitals and health systems. Would you say this was a particularly difficult year for a lot of hospitals and health organizations when it comes to cybersecurity?
Yeah, I think without a doubt, Ron, I think as we reflect on 2023, it was certainly an impactful year relative to successful breaches. Unfortunately, we saw a lot of large scale breaches. The number of individuals impacted increased significantly year over year, although the number of organizations was slightly down. We are seeing a bigger impact that is ultimately impacting patient care and communities.
It seems like there was a lot more patient records that were affected this year, like the number of patient records that were attacked seemed to more than double. This is pretty extraordinary because it's not like the past few years have been lacking in cyber attacks. But what do we attribute this rise in the compromised patient records over the past year?
Yeah, I think the angle to look at that through, Ron, is the adversary intent, right? So like, what are the bad guys trying to do? And the reality is, they're trying to get the most amount of data. One of the things that is unfortunate is that medical records are extremely valuable. There's multiple ways that you can monetize it from a bad actor's perspective. And so we're seeing the rise of third-party attacks because I can kind of get a one-to-many impact. We're seeing large-scale organizations be taken down so I can get the most amount of data out of the organization.
Now, it seems like even though I've heard that the number of breaches were down, but you still had more patient records being affected. So what does that tell? Are cyber attackers just unfortunately getting better, or are they targeting organizations more effectively, or maybe just going for the organization where they know they can get in? What's happening?
Yeah, I think traditionally our view is that our adversaries try to go to the path of least resistance, right? So the number one attack vector continues to be email, the human factor to get in. And then once they're in, they kind of live on the land to try to figure out how do I find the most amount of data before I get caught and then begin to extract that data. And so we're seeing a larger number of breaches relative to the number of individuals affected. We're seeing more downtime relative to being able to perform care in those communities. And frankly, it's pretty disruptive from the health systems perspective.
You mentioned email. So I wanted to ask you about that because we've been drilled for years now that you have to be careful with your email. Like, if say if you're an employee in an organization, you don't just click on a link from somebody you don't know. And yet, as you say, email is still the top vector of attacks. Is it just human nature where people just let their guard down, or is it even just from people wanting to help somebody who's in need that's what's happening here when they click on the link where they say, "Hey, I need your help," and then they click on the link? I mean, what's happening?
Yeah, I think part of the challenge is that the sophistication of the emails have increased exponentially over the last number of years, right? I mean, we can all remember, years ago when a prince or princess emails you and tells you you're a millionaire. It's not like that anymore. I mean, they are attacking specifically, like, let's just take Q4 as an example, right? That's a lot in the US, that's a large kind of enrollment period for benefits for the following year, right? And so they know that, right? They'll use HR language. They'll make the email look like it came from, the head of human resources or people and culture. It'll have the right branding on it. It'll look pretty sophisticated. And so if you're running through the hospital doing your day-to-day activities, you're overwhelmed, you're understaffed, you have these other macro elements within healthcare that are certainly challenging health systems, And then you roll up to your computer and you're moving quickly, and that's how they get you, you know? And so it is pretty sophisticated in the number of attacks that you get, and what they look like. And so that's just a continual educational element that we have to be cognizant of.
Now, I know Fortified Health Security came out with its 2024 edition of the Horizon Report looking at cybersecurity trends. One thing that really jumped out at me was the increase in attacks involving third-party vendors, which is something seems to be hearing more and more about. Apparently, nearly quadrupling over the last decade. Talk about what's happening there. Is that another area where attackers are finding success going into those the vendors that hospitals and health systems rely on for so many tasks?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about, you know, kind of the application and partnership stack within a health system, you know, they're going to have hundreds of vendors that they deal with and they exchange data with and that they're integrated with. And so this whole notion of, you know, going to a single EHR, there's still hundreds of other applications and services around that that allow us to provide care in these communities. And so what our adversaries are looking at is, okay, how do I get a one-to-many, you know, impact, right? Unfortunately. And so as they think about third parties, if I'm successful in penetrating a third party, I can hit multiple different health systems, potentially getting multiple different data elements from many different systems. And so from the adversary's perspective, it's attractive. And then I think on the health system side, you know, we're seeing organizations be a lot more thoughtful about the management of third party risk. You know, for example, you know, if I'm exchanging data with a third party, you know, what data am I sending? How much data am I sending? You know, some organizations may send a service provider, you know, 50 data elements, Ron, when they only need 20 to actually do their job. So we're refining the data that we're sending. We're also thinking through how long are we going to allow third parties to keep that data, right? We want them to be able to help us execute our mission and be a good partner, but we also have to limit the number of data, excuse me, the amount of data, as well as how long we're able to keep it. So organizations are rolling out much more robust third-party risk management. They call it TPRM in our industry, to really get our arms around the third-party risk and manage it more effectively.
You mentioned already a few interesting steps that organizations are doing with their third-party vendors. Let's just talk about that a little more, because again, they rely on literally, as you said, hundreds of vendors for their day-to-day tasks. What are some other steps hospitals and health systems can do with vendors, especially not even just new vendors they're looking to bring on, but vendors maybe they already have under contract? What are some other ways they can make sure they're safeguarding their patient data and their networks?
Yeah, I think the recommendations, you know, at the highest level is, you know, create a governance framework for risk and understand your risk tolerance as an organization relative to third parties, and then begin to prioritize and assess these third parties against that framework so that you as an organization can understand, you know, what risks relative to cybersecurity are present within a relationship, and then work through with that vendor to shore up their side of the organization, put in additional controls within your own environment to try to limit the impact, if and when there's a situation.
Wanted to talk to you about the patient impact. You already talked about a little bit about how these attacks can be really have a long lasting impact on hospitals and health systems. We're hearing more reports of hospitals and health systems having to do things like temporarily divert ambulances in the wake of a cyber attack or a ransomware attack, or maybe having to transfer patients, especially critical patients like stroke patients, other facilities. Are these attacks having a greater effect on patient safety, do you think?
Without a doubt, Ron. I mean, the blast radius of an organization that's impacted is larger than just that organization, right? You can see whether you're, if let's just say if you're an urban setting, you know, the amount of patients that are increased in the health systems that are around you also impacts them, right? And so that's an impact. If you're in a rural setting, you know, there may not be that service within, you know, miles, in some instances, hundreds of miles. And so we have to be very thoughtful about how quickly can we recover. And so organizations are thinking through what's my business impact analysis? What is my disaster recovery plan? You know, this kind of notion of, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, if, it's when, how quickly can we recover and be able to, you know, deliver care in these communities? I think it's going to be a really important thing over the next couple of years.
Boy, that term used, blast radius, was really telling, because we've seen that there was a published study about the cyber attack on Scripps Health a couple of years ago, how not only it delayed and affected patient care at Scripps Health, but you know, the study that was published in JAMA recognized that other nearby hospitals that weren't initially affected by the attack dealt with the effects of the attack because their waiting rooms were more packed. They had more delays in terms of dealing with patients. They were seeing more stroke patients because, some of the Scripps facilities had to transfer some of their patients peripheral, so to make sure they got the best care. But it really just shows it's not just a system that's attacked, as you say. It can be a number of hospitals and healthcare organizations around that system.
Without a doubt. And I think that as we look at some of the macro headwinds that health systems are facing right now around nursing shortages, increasing costs, 2022 and 2023 were horrendous from a financial performance relative to health systems, universally across the US. And so when you are not necessarily the impacted organization directly, you as the sister organization within that area, geographical area, your ability to flex up is quite limited, quite frankly, given some of the other trends that we're seeing that are kind of unrelated, but certainly impacted by a cyber event.
So given that we've seen more patient records compromised over the past year and seeing greater effects on patient care, are cyber attackers just getting better? Is the technology they're using just becoming more sophisticated? What do you think it is?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a couple of things. First of all, these attacks largely are very sophisticated, elaborate networks of adversaries, right? This is not, some person in their basement in a hoodie, right? These are very sophisticated kind of nation state attacks that are very coordinated. They're using AI, they're using the tools and developing new tools and new attack vectors to get into organizations. And so that's something that we have to be mindful of. The second thing is, health care in the US relative to cyber is still many, many years behind other regulated industries within healthcare, right? And so we have a lot of opportunity to increase our defenses and put in a defense in depth strategy within the healthcare delivery system to make sure that we're able to respond and defend ourselves better than we have in the past.
Well, you mentioned AI. We are contractually obligated to discuss AI in any conversation with healthcare technology.
Sure,
I say
sure.
that kidding, but it feels that way sometimes. But
Yeah.
how is artificial intelligence going to change cybersecurity, both on the attacker side and then maybe hopefully for hospitals, health systems on the defense side?
Yeah. So I'll start with the defense side. So most of the cybersecurity technologies, right, the vendors that we use to put controls in place are using some element of AI, right, and some element of machine learning. So there's this inherent value by putting in some of this next generation technology where, the underlying defenses learns not only from what's in your environment in your health system, but also where it's deployed in other health systems. They're using all of that information and kind of putting it out into all of the clients that are using that technology. So kind of all boats rise. So there's this element of like continuous learning that's present in technologies today. I think that will certainly continue. There'll continue to be more investments in their ability to detect and respond to zero-day attacks, which is effectively an attack that we haven't seen before in the wild. So I think we're getting more sophisticated in that regard. And it requires operationalizing around that technology, right? So we need to continue to upskill the humans that are helping make sure that this technology is working in concert with each other. On the adversary side, they're going to continue to use AI to craft more meaningful attacks. I mean, look, at the end of the day, these attackers are going to go to the area that's the least difficult to get in, which continues to be email. And so we're seeing a pretty significant rise in the sophistication of what those attacks look like relative to acting like the health system in those types of things.
I've almost heard AI described as an arms race in cybersecurity. Would you characterize it that way?
Yeah, I certainly think so, right? I think that for health systems, AI is multifaceted relative to the impacts that I think it can have both positively and negatively. And so, we touched on a little bit, excuse me, we touched on a little bit what is the underlying cyber technology using for AI, but the health systems itself is also using AI, right, to automate back office primarily. We're seeing it used certainly episodically within the clinical settings. And all of that intelligence is built on underlying data sets, right? And so we need to make sure that the integrity of the data sets, the governance, and those things don't get misinformation embedded within that machine learning model. So we have to be cognizant about that for sure. We also need to know that, there's a lot of AI tools that are kind of readily available, ChatGPT as an example. When we put information into ChatGPT, we need to make sure and be mindful that the information we're putting in there is not, protected health information, right? Because it feeds the machines. And so there's some governance. So I think we're in the early innings of it, but it's certainly something that I think can be very positively impactful to clinical care, but we just need to be responsible in how we roll it out.
What are some common mistakes you see organizations make when it comes to cybersecurity? Are there typical vulnerabilities that you see where organizations just are missing some easy opportunities to help protect themselves?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would say, Ron, is that, there's a lot of sophisticated cyber technology available in the market. Lots of great vendors out there. And health systems make decisions to procure that technology with the mindset of reducing risk, right? The likelihood and impact of an event. Where they miss sometimes is that the way that you actually extract the value or the risk reduction from that technology is people and process, right? And so you have to have the right level of individuals with the right level of knowledge, making sure that these tools are working in concert with each other, so that you get the risk reduction that you expect. And so that's an oftentimes a miss, and primarily because these health systems have limited teams, right, and limited budgets, right. And so we always encourage organizations to be thoughtful about, how am I monitoring it, how am I managing it, how am I making sure that we're deploying the patches, that we're deploying the upgrades, that we're keeping our pulse on the roadmaps of this underlying technology. So as they evolve and they add more AI or more capabilities, what is the impact to the organization? And that's a lot to do with a limited team. And so we encourage folks to think about that as well. The other thing that I would say is we oftentimes find organizations that have not necessarily fully deployed a set of cyber technologies, right? And so you end up with this kind of situation where your actual risk reduction and the risk reduction that you think you're getting is kind of off, right? And the only way to, close that gap, so to speak, is working with people and process.
I was wondering, with organizations, do you see a lot of cases where they have a bunch of tools, but they're really they've invested a lot in technology, but they don't really have the people to monitor those tools that they're using, and so, the technology is not as effective as it could or should be.
Exactly. Absolutely. No question. No question.
What advice would you give to hospitals and health systems that recognize they need to do better when it comes to cybersecurity?
Yeah, I think the first recommendation is continue to use a framework-based annual risk analysis. I think that's largely adopted, Ron. Most organizations are doing that. Most of them are doing that with a third party. So you don't have this whole dynamic of like the fox watching the hen house. I think we've made a lot of progress in that area. I think to take that to the next level is take the corrective action plan that is an output of that risk analysis and put it into a multi-year strategy so that you can understand where do I need to deploy more resources and more capital such that I can reduce more risk over time.
I was wondering, and maybe it's the same advice, but just wanted to ask it just in case. What about for smaller hospitals or smaller organizations that, they don't have 20 guys in the IT department that are working on cybersecurity? What can those smaller organizations do to better protect themselves?
Yeah, I think the number one recommendation is you're not going to be able to do it alone. So find some good partners, and make sure that you're very thoughtful about the technology that you deploy in your environment, right? You need to be thinking about speed to value. You need to be thinking about less complexity from an operational perspective. Excuse me. You need to make sure that you're able to put yourself in a situation where you can actually manage and monitor those tools. And then look, you're not in a position as a small health system to be bleeding edge. So let's make sure that you're doing some of the fundamentals that are required to reduce risk. Oftentimes, small health systems, small teams, what ends up happening is the cyber team does more than just cybersecurity. They may do networking, they may do infrastructure, they may do other elements of that health system. So what we find is that those individuals get pulled off on different projects. And they forget to do some of the daily tasks that are required to actually reduce risk, the things like patching and monitoring and some of those elements. And I think the good news is, I think there's a lot of cost-effective capabilities and partnerships out there that are available. And just recognizing, how do I pick a good partner and how do I make sure that we're working together to reduce risk?
It seems like we've seen attacks, obviously, at some big systems, but we've seen small organizations hit with attacks too. So, I mean, obviously, you would think a smaller hospital or health system, there wouldn't be as big a payday, but is the attraction like it's relatively low effort that, they're assuming that their smaller systems just don't have the resources to defend against a more sophisticated attack? And it may not be a big payday, but it's an easy payday.
Yeah, that I mean that's right. I mean, look, generally speaking, the adversaries are going to go to the path of least resistance, right? And so, I would probably submit to you that all healthcare organizations are under attack every day, and so they're just looking for the easiest way to get in and compromise data, and that could be a large system, it could be a small system, it could be through a third party. I think we got to be shields up, kind of across the board.
And I think you've already touched on this a little bit, but maybe just to hammer at home, how important is it to have that leadership buy-in when it comes to cybersecurity? Because I've heard some other analysts say where sometimes there's mistakes made where it's just left to the IT department to deal with cybersecurity. How important is it to have it be a high organizational priority?
Yeah, I think that's everything, Ron. I think it starts at the top. I think it starts at the board. I think it starts with the CEO and the C-suite. They've got to recognize that, in order for a healthcare organization to deliver their mission, which is quality care in their communities, cybersecurity is not a side project. It's infused into everything, right? And when I'm talking to those people in the C-suite, I talk to them about, look, you're deploying capital to buy a new CT machine or to, expand your outreach or, patient front door, all these new things that you're deploying capital. And the reality is all of those initiatives go away if you have a cyber incident and you can't, effectively deliver care, right? And so we got to be thoughtful about infusing cybersecurity into the fabric of everything that we do in the health system versus having it be standalone. And, quite frankly, some of that relies on the effectiveness for the CISO or CIO to communicate those risks to the organization and make sure that we're framing cybersecurity, to those C-suite leaders and to the board in the way that they're used to consuming data, which is typically, in a risk-based conversation.
So it seems like that having that buy-in and having people really all focus on this is something that touches every aspect of the organization seems very critical.
Yeah, and when you think about, what moves initiatives within health systems, and we can argue which one's number one or number two, but you've got care in the community, right? Anything that's going to impact care in the community, what's going to impact revenue, because we got to have a sustainable business model. We're still largely fee for service, so we got to, keep beds full and keep people coming. And then third is the regulatory environment, right? And I think we're seeing people wake up to the disruption of care in communities. We're certainly seeing impacts in the revenue side from, breaches being down, not being able to service patients, as you mentioned, Ron, diverting patients, that directly impacts the revenue. And then the third is there's a lot of traction around the regulatory environment, both at the state level and national level.
Well, this has been a great discussion, and I think you've offered a lot of perspective and some guidance that can be really helpful for health systems as they look to protect their patient data, their organization's finances, and even their institutional reputation. So thanks so much for taking the time today, Dan.
Absolutely, really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Databook, a podcast by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe to Databook wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest news, insights, and analysis of the healthcare industry, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.